You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 17th of October. Real basketball is played today. Jazz loaded with news yesterday, and it's get to know Donovan Mitchell. This is Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Hope you're doing great. Glad to have you aboard the program. You can get this program every single day on your Android, your Google, your Alexa, your iTunes, whatever you use, you can get it. And if you're for some reason not getting it right now, please let me know. Or if you know someone who's not getting it, please let me know. Because we did just switch to the Megaphone platform. There's a bunch of advantages to it, I think. And so we're hoping that's the case, but some people may not be getting it. Today's show brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai, Blake and the guys over at 4646 South State Street. And the Utah Snowmobile Show is going on Southtown Expo Center, October 20th and 21st. That's this Friday and this Saturday. All right, let's get to the show. Even though what you really want me to do is just to go straight to the get-to-know Donovan Mitchell, because I know you're dying to get to know this kid more. He has just taken everybody by storm, and he's going to have a great year. Well, that'll be coming up in a second, but I got about five things I want to hit on first. The biggest news of the day yesterday is probably the Dante Exum shoulder surgery. That I think we knew was coming, and it's disappointing. No timetable was given. I think there's probably one of two scenarios out there. There's the unfortunate reality of a high possibility that that's it for the season for Dante. That so incredibly similar to the one summer league game we got after his rookie year where you thought he was going to look good. He sprains his ankle and then ends up tearing his ACL. And this time we got three preseason games of thinking he's turned the corner. And boy, was he ever turning the corner. And instead now it could be season eight. The other possibility, just kind of doing research around the internet, is that you could be a four-month recovery on this. If you kind of search around guys that have had shoulder surgery similar to this, you could end up with a four-month situation, which gets him to like the middle of February and actually hits the All-Star break. Now, it's a little later because he's doing the surgery next week. But that's, you know, that would be cool if he could work his way back. Then you're dealing with the psychological hurdles of trying to overcome the injury again, but at least it's not a non-season and you get over that psychological hurdle a little bit. It certainly looks as though there'll be no extension done with him, and so therefore he comes back next year with as a restricted free agent and hopefully is able to play free without worrying about it too much. So that to me, I there's a possibility of that. Not that I got this from any doctors or anything like that. Just if you go Google search shoulder surgery, AC joint, NBA, and you find some of the players who've had it over the years, that's kind of what you'll come up with. By the way, if you're going to go do that search, you need to get rid of, you have to do that little advanced feature where you get rid of Dante Exum, because now the only thing that you get on, and I use some NFL players as well. I think Eric Gordon of the NBA had it at one point. I think Jason Wirth in the Major League Baseball had it at one point. Those were some of the other names that are out there. But you do, if you're going to go do the same thing and find out what I did, which I think some of you often do, you absolutely have to do the advanced setting tool where you do not allow Dante Exum into your results, or else that's all you get. So anyway, it's not good. It's really disappointing. It wasn't good then. It's not, it didn't get any better yesterday. So I don't know. I do think the surgery is the answer. If you deal with shoulder joints the best way, this is a little different than kind of what I'm talking about, but one of the One of the things that is often talked about with shoulder joints is they're kind of like that old sweatshirt you have in which you've rolled up your sleeve a bunch of times and stretched it out. And once you've stretched it out, then it never really comes all the way back. And so that's probably why this is the right call, as unfortunate as that is. So hopefully we won't know anything for quite some time. I don't think they're not going to tell us if he's suddenly going to be a February possibility. I don't think they would want to. That doesn't do any good because you put that pressure on him, then he might not be as honest as he would be otherwise about his rehab and a few things like that. And if you rule him out for the season, that doesn't do any good because of the fact that then you've ruled him out for the season. If he does come back and suddenly something doesn't go right, well, then you rushed him back, which isn't really true. So there doesn't do any good to get a timetable, so we're not going to get one. That's the truth. Joel Bolomboy does not make the Jazz roster. A little bit of a surprise, I think, for a lot of people, unless you've been listening to this podcast. Before I dig into that and break down why that happened, let me tell you a little bit about what's going on at Murdoch Hyundai in October. The first thing that's happening at Murdoch Hyundai is I'm about to call Blake and say, all right, I think I'm buying a car. Because actually, after all these times of telling you guys about all these things involving the Santa Fe and how much I loved it, I actually think I'm going to follow through exactly with what I've told you, which is I've been so blown away by the value you can get for the car. I've been so blown away by the safety features of it that our two primary cars are a Toyota Highlander that's got 110,000 and an Audi A4 wagon that's got 130,000. And both of them are, you know, probably 10 years old plus and or more. And neither of them have a single safety feature, and I've got a 16-year-old who's about to drive. So we're about to – I'm actually about to, I think, back up my word here and add a new car to the house, which has all the safety features of the Santa Fe Sport. And I'm going to call Blake and find out if this deal he's got going on right now that's $7,000 off is as good a deal as I'm going to get. See, October's interesting for Blake because Blake buys all the cars from Hyundai. They're on his books. They're not loaned. He can't ship them back. So as the new 2018s are coming in, he's got a clear inventory. So he's got $7,000 off the Santa Fe Sport right now, and he's got $6,500 off the Sonata at 4646 South State Street in Murray. The Hyundai brand, I think, will wow you with what you can get for the value. And then the Murdochs will make sure that your experience is one, as they like to say, with no regrets. But it really means that you know they're doing everything they possibly can to improve your circumstance and your experience. That's Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. All right, let's move to Joel Bolomboy, Royce O'Neal situation. I think this has surprised some people, particularly because Bolomboy had such a good off preseason. He did not have a good summer league, and I think that mattered, and I think that hurt him. And I think Royce O'Neal's really good. When I say really good, I think he's a rotation player in the NBA. So the first thing I would just say is I don't think this is an indictment in any way, shape, or form that Joel Bolomboy is not an NBA player. I think he has some work to do. And that one of the biggest weaknesses I think he has is when he gets the ball, he still holds it, not entirely sure what's going to happen next. Now, with that said, his athleticism is NBA level. His development of his shot is NBA level. He showed a brand new off the bounce game that was just terrific. I'll tell you what, I was crazily impressed by what he did this year and the growth from a poor summer league with a little injury into the way he played in training camp. Really very impressive. And a tip of the hat to him, a huge tip of the hat to Joel Bolomboy. And it means he's going to still get paid and play in this league. Now the Jazz, frankly, would hope that somebody picks him up right now off waivers the next 48 hours because then they don't have to pay him. But I don't know if that's going to happen. Let's turn the focus to Royce O'Neal. So Royce O'Neal came out of Baylor, went undrafted. He's 6'6", 220 pounds, 6'10 wingspan, 8'8 standing reach. So he actually hits a lot of the measurables. He went to Portsmouth. He had a decent Portsmouth camp, but he goes undrafted and he goes to Europe for the last 2 years and becomes a stat stuffer. Becomes a really nice stat stuffing player. And the cool thing that happens for a player like this, Buckets O'Neal, right now, is that now he played 19 minutes a game last year in Europe. And what that does is means he will be able to assimilate into whatever role he might have on this team. And this guy's gone through the journey. He played Vegas for Boston in 15-16. He played Salt Lake City in 15-16. Camp for Boston, if you recall, he was decent in that camp. He then went 16-17. He went with Golden State and then with the Clippers and then with New Orleans for various set in 17-18. This last year he played it with New Orleans. So he's played a lot of summer league. He's not shot it great. He shot it pretty well in Jazz camp this year, which is kind of a new development for him. He hit 4 of his 8 threes in play. And he started his college career in Denver, played 2 years for Denver, and then he went to Baylor. And it's an interesting thing. He started 101 college games and shot 40%. And at Baylor, he shot 46 and 44% his 2 years. So you'd believe he could probably shoot. And he's one of these guys that was just kind of in the system, right? He was a system player. And if you look at his senior year at Baylor, there's, you know, he's one, by this point, he's a senior. He's not wowing you with anything, but it's kind of one of those box scores that you look at and you say, wait a sec, it's not surprising to me that 2 years later, after some experience in Europe, someone decides he can play. 10 points, 6 rebounds, 3.5 assists, a steal, and half a block. Shooting 44% from three. Little surprised he doesn't get drafted. And he went to Europe the last 2 years, played really, really well, and he's a good basketball player. He is got a decent handle. He makes good passing decisions. He's smart basketball player. He, as I said, I think will become an average to above average catch and shoot guy. He's really kind of in the ilk of the Joe Ingles find. And maybe even back to the Kevin O'Connor, Wesley Matthews find. 6'5", kind of do-it-all guy who I think could play 15 minutes a night right now in the NBA and not hurt you. In fact, might be one of those subtle help you guys. And that's kind of cool. I believe we aired our Royce O'Neal Get to Know a little while ago, so I will link to that in the show notes if you didn't get to hear it. No extension done for Rodney Hood. We talked about that yesterday. Maybe the bigger story is I believe only 3 extensions done in the entire draft class. That to me is the bigger story. The market is just not there for these guys. One other interesting note from yesterday, Neto was limited in practice again, and so Nate Walters is on the active list for opening night rather than Neto as the third point guard, which really means Donovan Mitchell probably plays that backup point guard minutes probably against Emmanuel Mudiay. It's a pretty interesting matchup for Donovan. Donovan's going to play. The kid just, he's got it. The kid's going to play. A lot of minutes. So we'll see how the rotation works. But I think Donovan's going to play some of the one. He's going to play some of the two. I don't think he's going to close games, but I don't think that's outlandish either along the way. Hey, the Utah Snowmobile Show is back. It's winter, boys and girls. Okay, it's not quite, but it's coming. So get started this week with a visit to the Utah Snowmobile Show. It's October 20th and 21st. The show is at a new location, the Southtown Expo Center in Sandy. That is bigger than where it was last year, if you recall. So that means 50% larger than last year. All the extra space is filled with more vendors, more booths, more snowmobile accessories to check out before winter. 2018 sleds from Ski-Doo, Polaris, and Arctic Cat. new snow bike conversion systems, awesome modified sleds, turbo skis, tracks, clothing, avalanche gear, smart, and more. Good seminars. Friday with photographer Ryan Thompson. Saturday, backcountry riding techniques with Brett Rasmussen. If you're going to go out in the backcountry, please be smart, be educated, know what you're doing. Take advantage of it. It's all going on. The 2017 Utah Snowmobile Show, October 20th and 21st, presented by Fly Racing Southtown Expo Center this year. Opens Friday at 3, Saturday at 10. Friday it's 3 to 9, Saturday it's 10 to 6. Just those 2 days. Don't miss it. Discount tickets are available at SNOW, Snow, W-E-S-T, but not two W's, just one. S-N-O-W-E-S-T, snowest.com/shows for just $5. SNOWEST.com/shows, or you can purchase them at $8 for the show. Southtown Expo Center, 3 o'clock Friday, 10 a.m. Saturday. Don't miss it. One player, and then we'll do the Donovan Mitchell get to know. One player that I think is really playing well and earning time is Epe Udo. He just does things right. His offensive range is 4 feet. He's actually pretty good inside 4 feet. But he is really solid defensively, a very good passer, and just every game I've seen him in, whether it's a scrimmage or whether it's in the building or whether it's preseason game, he just makes impacts. And then you go back and look at his numbers that he was plus minus positive in a lot of ways in almost every year he played until the end. It makes some sense. So I think this is a guy that's going to get time, maybe even beat out Jarebko in the rotation. Maybe even me and the Jazz are going to play two bigs with him as the second big more than we think. And I think he's going to be a valuable piece to this puzzle this year. I think you'll see him playing 12, 13, 14 minutes a night. Maybe I'm wrong, but I do think that's the case, and a little surprising. I think that's a development of training camp that has not been talked about a lot. All right, let's get to what you want. It's the Donovan Mitchell Get to Know. The Donovan Mitchell Get to Know interview. We sat down. What a delightful young man, and here's our conversation. Let's get to know Donovan Mitchell. If you took me back to your hometown, what would you show me? Where would you take me?
I'd probably take you to two states, to be honest with you. I grew up mainly most of my life in New York, but I live in Greenwich, Connecticut currently. So I'd probably take you around New York City, because I love being there, around where I grew up, where I used to play basketball, where I remember vividly thinking I would never be in the NBA because, you know, it's such a long shot. And then I'd take you to Greenwich, where I learned so many things off the court, how to be a good, humble person, you know, to a character, how to speak, how to be a pro, I guess you could say, without knowing it was giving you the tools to be a pro, and just show you all these spectacular restaurants. There's one street called Greenwich Avenue where it's a bunch of designer stores for about 6-7 straight blocks down a hill. Got to take you to Todd's Point, which is like a little bit of a beach area, and obviously show you my home and show you where I grew up and where I went to school.
What are you in birth order, brothers and sisters?
I'm the oldest by five years.
So you are the little sister thinks you walk on water and admires you a bit?
Yeah, but now she's getting to the age where she feels she's the queen and everything revolves around her, which I understand. She's 15, so she's getting to that age.
If you took me back to that childhood room, what's on the walls, what would you show me? What would I see?
Probably a picture posted of LeBron, all my trophies, a bunch of signed baseballs, basketballs, a lot of video games, probably too many to count, shoes. I still have my first pair of shoes I ever dunked in, white and orange, Hyperdunks. Spilled grape soda on them, so that was pretty upset about that. I'll never forget that. Under Armour Elite 24 basketball invite. The picture of me dunking at that game. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. There's stuff I'm forgetting, but that's pretty much it.
So when you were in the backyard or on the local court, who were you pretending to be?
It's kind of 50-50, split 50-50. Mike Piazza for a good most of my life, and then when it got warm out again, I pretended to be LeBron, T-Mac, MJ. I used to actually go to my friend's house, or my friends come over, we'd put jerseys on and pretend to be them. So I put Michael Jordan's jersey on, T-Mac, Vince Carter, LeBron, D-Wade, and we would just play.
It's all right. We played games and I announced them.
It's incredible. you announce the games.
Yeah, we would play little games like wiffle ball and things like that, I would announce them. And we would do pre- and post-game shows.
Really?
Yes. So, you know. What was your first nickname you ever got?
Spider. Definitely Spider.
And where's that from?
I had long arms. I never knew it would translate to my real, actual game, but I had long arms, quick, and just get a lot of steals. And my teammate's dad always called me that, never called me by my real name. And said it's because I was spinning my web. That's how fast my arms were moving.
So when you get a steal, I can call it a spider bite?
That's fun. I like that.
Okay. All right. I think I know the reason, but why don't you tell the story of why you were 45?
So I was a baseball and basketball player, and you know, Michael Jordan was 23 to everybody, but he wore 45 to play baseball and even basketball periodically. So, and also I like being different too. And no one chooses 45 when you think of Michael Jordan, but I do.
I'm not sure if you've totally experienced this yet, but this is like a life of downtime.
Yeah.
And you actually mentioned the other day you like to kind of get out and go around. What do you like to do in your downtime?
I love watching other people play sports. Whether it's football, basketball, baseball, soccer, hockey, lacrosse, whatever. I just love watching sports, sporting events. I love seeing people compete. It's just, it gives you something to do, you know. You get to see people in their natural spaces where they're one person there and a different person off the floor, you know. Love watching Netflix. It's a big thing of mine. Xbox is always huge. But when I'm getting out, when I'm walking around, I just love just interacting with people, you know. And using my platform now to make people's day, to make people say hi to me, make sure to take a picture, say hello, do whatever, but just having fun.
All right, I'll go check the NHL schedule and see when we have nights off and NHL games. I usually do that.
Are there NHL games on there?
Well, no, when we play.
Oh, you mean.
Like if we're in Atlanta on a night off and they play.
I would definitely go. Yeah, I would definitely go.
That's why I always check that. I haven't checked it yet. What is your guilty pleasure?
Candy and snacks, unhealthy snacks. It's bad, but I'm getting better at it.
What is the most memorable moment of your career?
Wow. Getting drafted. Probably because I never thought it would happen. Or at least that fast. Getting drafted for sure.
All right, I got to tell you a funny story about you getting drafted. So Ron Boone, who you've met, is my analyst. Mm-hmm. I'm in Japan for the draft. In the draft. First time I've ever missed the draft. And I'm getting like the reports probably from Woj tweets or something. And I text him from Japan. We should trade right now. And go get Donovan Mitchell with this pick.
Really?
And obviously, I knew that was our interest, but he texted me back like, from Japan? So I was on a Shinkansen train going through, I think, Nara at the time. Anyway, all right, let's talk a little bit about the kind of this book, Angela Duckworth's book, Grit, and Daniel Coyle's book, Talent Code, and just that leads to elite athletes. And the first kind of aspect of this is like, what made you believe? What made you believe that you would get here one day?
It really took me about, what's it, October? I would say about April or May to kind of figure that out, to be honest with you. People always, I tell that to people and they kind of get surprised, but, you know, I never really thought NBA, you know, I thought I was good, you know, I was all right, made all ACC first team, leading scorer and all that, but you know, I never really thought that I'd be playing with these guys, and I just, one part of me is just on like determination, you know, I never give up, and I worked out with Chris Paul and Paul George, and they were the ones to really tell me that if you go get this, like you can do it, like, you know, and I've always had that hard working and that attitude in my life, but when you hear that from two future Hall of Famers, you know, it makes you go even harder. Not saying you're not going hard, but like you kind of realize, all right, this is closer than I imagine. And I think that's what really kind of set it off in my head.
Your father, just on paper, your father seems very interesting in this, in the sense that he, I think, had 8 years in the minor leagues, never got to the big leagues, now has made the big leagues as an employee. But is there any level where he either taught you, you better go get something else in your life because you don't know if it's going to happen, or you better really grind because you're going to... What was his role and his past experience, do you think, in this journey?
I would say your example of you better have something else would come from my mom. I would say that was her big thing. That's why we went to a private school, went to all these things, because that was my thing. I said, look, you know, basketball get me there. And my dad was, like, obviously dad was pushing sports, but I was like, look, basketball, I'm playing basketball player, but you're not just a basketball player. And I think that's what I try and show everyone, that I'm not just a Utah Jazz player. Like, I'm a person, you know, I mess up, I make mistakes. You know, we're not all hyped up. You know, I'm the same kid that'll start talking trash to everybody on the bench and have this angry face on, but at the same time get off the court. And I'm the same kid that loves watching SpongeBob, you know, like, he, or loves DJing, loves doing anything off the court, you know, being a different person. And I think that was really big for my mom pushing me, that, like, to be something more than just an athlete, because there are a lot of athletes in this world who didn't make it, you know. And I tell this to all the time, there's a 1 in 1,800 varsity athletes make it to the pros. And that was the mindset, how I looked at it.
I'm guessing it's probably 180,000, not 1,800. I bet you it's – or college varsity athletes?
No, high school.
High school. I bet it's more than 1 in 1,800.
So?
Yeah.
And it's not just basketball. I mean, it is just right. The NBA, sorry. It's just the NBA.
I think that number's probably bigger than
1 in 180,000.
I think it's probably 180,000.
I could be wrong. Yeah, yeah.
I'll look it up.
But that's when you look at it like that, your approach. And obviously, like I said, my dad was really pushing the sports, and my hard work and my determination came from just working hard as I possibly could. But I pride myself on, if you see me on the street, you don't just, if I'm not wearing my Jazz stuff, you don't say, oh, that's a basketball, that's just a regular person. And that's how I like to be represented.
My number's too big, by the way. I'm trying to figure it out right now.
So we'll figure that out.
When you look back at your journey, I know it's still young, but
18,000.
Yeah, it's probably in the middle. Yeah. When you look back at your journey, where were you different than the other kids? Where was your commitment or your work ethic or your dedication different than the other kids?
I would say, looking back on it, I didn't realize at the time, I think between 9th and 12th grade, and I don't really count sophomore, and I mean, I guess you can, 9th and 12th grade, and even in college, there would be times where I know my friends are going to parties. You know, that's the biggest thing. You're a teenager, you want to go hang out with friends, you know, girls are a big deal, you know. And I don't think, when I was in Greenwich, I went to school in Greenwich, I don't think I went to probably one party in my 3 or 4 years being in Greenwich Country Day. Like, never went out on the weekend. I was always Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you can catch me in the city playing basketball. And I think, looking back on that, if I don't do that, I don't know. I'm not saying I wouldn't make it, but it would be a lot harder. You know, I think that's where that came from.
There's in the book, Grit, says to be gritty is to resist complacency, whatever it takes to want to improve. Mm-hmm. When did you first show that?
Resist complacency. I got my UNC offer, 10th sophomore year. I would say this is when I first realized it. I don't know if that was the first time I ever did it, first time I realized it. I got my first UNC offer, and or letter, excuse me. Letters were equivalent to offers to me in my head, but it obviously went the same thing. And as soon as I got it, I didn't do anything else. I went right to the gym and worked out. And my friend commented at the time, but I had no idea what he meant at the time. He said, you were the first person that I've ever seen to get a letter or something from UNC or a big school and go right to the gym. Usually guys go and celebrate or whatever, and that's the time to get complacent. You know, like, oh, I'm here, they're looking at me, let me relax. But I was eager to go right to the gym.
What's the most difficult part of trying to improve?
I hate making mistakes. I hate making mistakes. So I think that's the biggest part. You know, just making sure that everything has to be perfect. Even when I'm trying something new, like if I'm trying a new way to, like a new move, and I have to make the shot, I'll be completely upset that I didn't make it perfect. Like, I didn't make the shot. The move might have been good, but I didn't make the shot. Everything has to be perfect with me, and I think it's a good thing because I'm always wanting to perfect what I do, but that's the most difficult part for me because I get so antsy and I'm ready to do it right away.
When you finish a game, do you remember the good or the bad?
I remember everything I did poorly. Everything. And I would say that started from Louisville, playing for Coach P, because you don't remember the good at all. You could win by 50 and there's still, we had this video called Good, Bad, and Ugly, and the bad is always longer than the good. So definitely when I remember the bad, for sure. You know, you get the moments where you think about, wow, I did this, this, and that, but when that film comes around, you forget, you remember, like, oh, this is what I did this year, I did this here, and it goes back to being perfect, and I get mad at myself all over again. So it's a whole cycle.
There's two quotes when I was reading these books that jumped out to me. I'm going to share both of them with you and get your reaction. We'll do one at a time. To do anything really well is to have to overextend yourself, to do something over and over that is unnatural until it becomes natural.
One more time. Which one? Are these two different ones?
This is really, I shortened it up.
Okay.
to do anything really well, you have to overextend yourself. You have to do something over and over that is unnatural until it becomes natural.
I agree.
Do you have a personal experience of that yet that would come to mind?
I would say my shooting, actually. Coming out of high school, I was just a dunker who played defense and did hustle play. I made hustle plays, but coming into Louisville, I worked on improving my arc. That was the first thing Coach P said to do. I shot 19%. I believe it was 18 of 75 from the three-point line. I remember that because I said myself to myself every time I worked out, that was the number I put in my head, and just worked on shooting with arc. You would think the ball would touch the top of the roof, how high I shot it, and it was weird. Like, but I kept making them. You know, that's where I would definitely say my shooting stroke and my confident shooting came from.
Second one is, well, this is my favorite. Superlative performance is really a confluence of a dozen small skills, each one learned, which then becomes drilled into a habit.
I agree.
Any other example there? Maybe it's back to shooting. Maybe it's something else.
I would say here, starting here. In college, you don't have the same type of treatments and the daily routines that you have here. And obviously, it's hard when you have class and whatnot. But coming here, working with this new training staff, there's stuff I do with my body now. And I don't think I've – like, my bad days are really good days in college. You know, I think just the little details are what gives you good performance. Like, on a back-to-back. You know, I haven't played back-to-back basketball games since I can't tell you when.
Probably ACC,
you know?
Tournament.
Exactly. And we only went – you know, we didn't even play any. I played one game in AC tournament in 2 years.
Right.
So there you go. So like
some AAU tournament.
Exactly. So definitely being able to play back to back and having energy definitely showed me that there's those little things. You know, wearing recovery tights. You know, getting the stem on your legs. All the little things that you overlook as a, I can't say as a young kid, 'cause I'm young, but like younger. You know, you just overlook it and say, I'm just gonna go home and sleep. When you wake up next morning, you feel it. You know, I don't feel as sore, I don't feel as tired because of the treatment and the little things that I do 3 hours before practice starts and 2 hours after practice ends.
Final thing, I actually remember that you came off one of the open gyms. I was talking to Walt Perrin and you said, man, am I tired. But then the next thing you said, well, tomorrow I got this. And then I said, so when you're tired, when it's been 8 days in a row or Pacino's been on you, what gets you back out the next day?
I can give you two different answers. First one, just the love of it, compete, you know. Even if I have 8 or 9 days straight or I feel drowsy, I'm not letting anybody to, like, try and use that day. Oh, this is my day to get. No, that can't happen. You know, those are the days you can't have, because that 9th or 10th day could change a lot. And I'm speaking personally, not as a team. It's just as for Donovan, you know, as that 9th or 10th day could do it. I don't know what could happen. Like, that person could have 40. You know, and that could be the night he goes off for a career night on you. You know, and that there's no excuses for nights like that. And then second, days where I do feel tired, especially now, I'm like, man, like, I don't have class. Like, I don't have to go do anything. Like, this is my job. Like, you don't have room for being tired. Like, why are you tired? You know, I think that's what keeps me going, because, you know, this is what I've been dreaming for. Like, I've been, like I told you this whole time, since I was a child. You know, there's no room to look back and be, oh, I'm sluggish today. Like, no, you 2, 3, 4 hours and you're out. Like, that's it. Go kill in the three or four hours and then be rest and get ready for the next day.
Donovan, thanks for the time.
All right, thank you.
And yes, if you're wondering, 45 jerseys are on sale at all fan stores. Wow, what a kid. Just so impressive. So well spoken, so bright, so thoughtful, so well raised. Tip of the hat to the Mitchell mom and dad. Interesting story about mom pounding sports, and that school he went to was one of the best schools in the country, and dad pushing the sports, and then eventually it sounds like they decided to allow him to go pursue the sports. Good call, good timing, but didn't overly push him early. So pretty interesting conversation there with the Mitchell family, with Donovan, insight into the Mitchell family. Really wonderful. Their daughter Jordan, super nice as well, met her this summer. So what a great kid. Can't wait to cheer him on. The spider web, the spider bite. What other spider things do we have that we're going to use into the call? Oh, Donovan puts the spider web on Wilson Chandler and he can't get free. I don't know. All right. By the way, Anchor is an app on your phone that allows, I have a little station I built. I'll do little updates during the day on Anchor. And what I really want to do with Anchor is have you give me your thoughts, your responses, your comments during the game, during during the week, and so I can have some interaction from you and your comments. So check that out. Look for my Twitter when it throws out there, or download the Anchor app and look for me. You will find it. That is there for you. Today's show brought to you by Utah Snowmobile. October show 20th and 21st at the Southtown Expo Center, and by Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. Ask for Blake and tell him I sent you, and then tell him that he'll be seeing me shortly. All right, that is today's show. Tomorrow, get to know Ricky Rubio, which is also awesome. He was really thoughtful as well. It is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.